Welcome to Creative Maine, an hour-long monthly program produced for and broadcast by WERU 89.9 FM, Blue Hill, Maine, and at WERU.org. This show considers the making of craft, fine art, food, literature, music, dance, museums, and any other form of creative expression here in Maine. We also discuss topics of global cultural significance and interest. My name is Adina Salmonson, and I am your host for this monthly exploration of all things creative. Should you have comments, questions, input, or suggestions for the show, send them to info@weru.org. Please list Creative Maine in the subject line. The life of the arts is a test of the quality of a nation's civilization, said JFK. As a lifelong musician and crafter, I am thrilled to be presenting my areas of interest and passion to you on our wonderful community radio station right here in my Orland backyard. On today's show, we will chat with several wonderful guests. Spencer Janney, the craft brewer of Naiad Country Brewery. Lance and Liz Meadows from So Rugged engage in Not Your Grandma's Sewing. And Keith Drago, the director of the Carver Memorial Library in Searsport, will invite us to a Shangri-La for crafters for a good cause. Welcome, Spencer Janney, to Creative Maine. I'm so glad that you could come on our show and talk to our listeners about craft brewing and in general and in specific your craft brewery, which is called Naiad Country Brewery in Orland, Maine. So welcome, and I'd like to start out by having you discuss Naiad Country Brewery. What a great name. And what's the concept behind it? How did you come up with the name Naiad? And what are some of your signature products? What do you do?
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Adina. I'm happy to be here. And yeah, Naiad Country Brewery has been a super exciting project to take on. I've been brewing professionally for the last about 8 years before taking on this project. And I had a lot of experience in production-oriented breweries that were in warehouse spaces in urban environments and made incredible beer. But I noticed during my time working in the industry that this association with beer and manufacturing and industrial processes kind of has arisen in America. And it's so interesting because when you look at most beer cultures in other countries, beer is tied to agriculture. It's a product of the land, and it's something that I think is really beautiful to be enjoyed in a location that evokes the agricultural beauty by which you get the barley and the hops. Similar to having wine at a beautiful vineyard, you know, it ties everything together. And so that sort of lit this fire under me to try to create a community-oriented brewery in a rural location on a property which we're hopefully growing ingredients that are being utilized in the beer, as well as, you know, offering some limited food. I think that having food alongside a good beverage is a really, you know, vital and human thing. So yeah, we've experimented with growing cucumbers and making pickles so far. I'm into fermented foods. So we want to get into some sauerkrauts and just really emphasize that agricultural connection that craft beer has with the land on which it's produced.
What a wonderful concept, because the idea of handcrafted is in a lot of advertisements, but yet the beer is made or the ale is made in a commercial space. Very interesting. So right now, Naiad, where did you come up with Naiad?
Yeah, so the Naiads in Greek mythology are the nymphs of fresh water. So the mermaids of rivers, lakes, streams, wells. And they kind of personify the allure of nature that can, you know, bring you out of your day-to-day life and sort of invite you on an unexpected adventure, which is why I think they're often represented as these beautiful ethereal, you know, nymphs in the forest. And when my partner Anne and I moved up from the Lewiston area where her family is based, it was really all of the wonderful bodies of fresh water in this area that attracted us. So we're, you know, down our road is the Alamoosuc Lake. We're right off the Penobscot. The Orland River is running right through town. Mm-hmm. Pond, Craig's Pond, all these beautiful bodies of water first drew us to the area. And then we realized we were going to be brewing rurally off well water on the property here. And you can't make good beer with bad water. So we were really trying to sort of give the credit where credit's due and invite some goodness into our water source to try to have, you know, that reciprocity with the beer. And, you know, we still ended up with some iron and manganese in the water that we needed to soften and pull out so that the beers would taste right. But I think it worked. The well has treated us wonderfully. And yes, it's been really nice to tie into the beauty of this area.
Great. I agree. It's a stunning area. I live on the Orland River and I couldn't agree more. So You mentioned that you were in brewing for about 8 years. So share your path leading to craft brewing. And you mentioned a little bit about it, but how did you become a craft brewer? And what were other creative pursuits of yours when you were growing up and a young adult?
So those things are, you know, I think as it often goes, quite closely tied together. I was obsessed with reading my whole childhood and writing. I loved writing poetry, writing stories. I started, you know, enough novels as a second grader to, you know, clog up cubbies and never get finished. But I really, really enjoyed reading fantasy novels, Lord of the Rings, you know, books like that. And in all of these novels, there's always this magical sounding tavern that is stumbled across after weeks, you know, in the wilderness or after a battle or whatever it may be. And these places always just struck me as the most warm, friendly, community-oriented places. And these descriptions of this brown beer, you know, would always find their way into these pages as I'm 14 years old, 13 years old, reading them. And I decided as a 14-year-old, pretty much, I got to make some of this stuff. What is the deal? So very, very soon, I actually did not yet have a driver's license. I had an older friend drive me to the local homebrew store, and I told my parents, I'm brewing a porter. And I got, you know, it wasn't illegal at the time to buy barley, yeast, and hops. It wasn't buying beer. And they, to their credit, were like, if you can come up with the money to you know, get into this hobby, it's not a cheap hobby. You need lots of pots and siphons and, you know, various ingredients. Why not? So they were very kind in letting me sort of experiment with it on my own. And yeah, at about 15, I started brewing at home and did some initial experiments that turned out really, really well. It was a really fun, creative outlet at that time. And I was really just learning an entirely new process and a new avenue for self-expression, which is what it's really become at this point, now that I'm so familiar with the basic processes and how the ingredients all mesh together. So yeah, at that point I started brewing at home when I was 15. And then when I was 18, I left after my freshman year of college to go work in the industry. I moved to Jackson, Wyoming and was ski bumming there while working at a brewery and bussing tables and working at an ice cream shack all at the same time. And that was super gratifying. But the legal gray area of being under 21 in a brewery was challenging to navigate. And I, you know, through the fortuitous confluence of circumstances that the universe sometimes presents when you're on the right path, stumbled into a brewing job in Australia at 19. So I ended up out there for a good 8-9 months and really sort of honed the craft out there. And then it meant a lot to my parents for me to come back to the States and finish up school. So I came back and worked in breweries while finishing up school in Colorado. And then after graduating, went out and worked in California for a big lager producer for a good while before moving to Maine and starting to work on the business plan to open up my own spot.
What an incredible confluence of luck and exciting experiences. Australia, wow. Well, this brings up a thought. How much of brewing is chemistry? How much is cooking? And how much is plain luck or intuition? What would you say to that?
One of the things I so love about this craft is I truly believe that it's a blend of all three. And depending on what you're doing or what you're focusing on, you can really lean into the aspects of it that light you up. For me, it is a lot to do with intuition and art and fun and self-expression. But one of the things that I'm so grateful for in having worked for larger production-oriented commercial breweries for a number of years before opening my own place is I really learned the importance of the chemistry, the attention to detail, and you know the science behind the Maillard reactions, the flocculation of yeast, all these terms, which are absolutely vital if you're going to make a replicable product. So if you have created a beer that you want people who enjoy to identify with and come back for, the chemistry and the science behind replicating that exact beer becomes paramount. Versus, you know, if you're producing a new beer every 2 weeks and are constantly rotating through new and exciting seasonal options that never return, you can get pretty creative and intuitive with what ingredients you want to add, what timings, you know, things are going to happen at. But the fascinating thing to me about brewing and why it's a craft that continues to open itself the more I delve into it, it is stocked with different tidbits of scientific knowledge and different, you know, avenues of experiments and different, you know, colloquial knowledge from different Belgian versus German versus Czech sources. So it's just a pretty infinite landscape in terms of where you can dig into it. So yeah, I would say it's really a blend of all three. And I know brewers who are total science nerds, you know, and for them, it is a microbiology chemistry, you know, endeavor. And I know total, you know, poet, philosopher brewers who will crack a twig off of a bush in their backyard and drop it into their wort at the end of the brew to inoculate it with wild yeast off of that plant that they have no idea what effect that's going to end up having in the beer. So really a blend.
It's a blend between consistency and food safety, which is the science end of it, versus the creativity and the on the spur of the moment kind of whim. That would make a good special, I would imagine.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that is a bit of a, that's kind of what I would say I stand on at Naiad Country Brewery is we make a lot of creative, interesting beers that are backed and undergirded by my commercial experience in production-oriented breweries where the chemistry is really, really dialed. That's why I think people will find exciting different options here, but they will also know that they could come back, you know, 6 months after having our main mild, for example, and it will taste the exact same and deliver, you know, the way that they want it to.
Right. Right. Now, I'd like to just turn the subject to the idea of the Maine Craft Beer Trail. I believe that's what it's called. What makes Maine such fertile ground for such a thing? There's a lot of craft breweries on that list. So you could ideally spend a whole summer just bopping from brewery to brewery. Why Maine?
I think that the reason why Maine is such fertile ground for a craft beer trail is the same reason why I chose to start a brewery here and to do it in a state that I had not spent much time in prior to moving here in 2021. And that is that, again, there are many states, I think, for example, of Denver, Colorado, where there are districts of the city that due to zoning laws and usually a manufacturing pass, so there's warehouse spaces that are unoccupied, all these things, you don't get that same widespread diversity of options and people finding different approaches. I think the reason Maine is so ripe for that is it's a state that encourages small businesses. It's a state that is fairly lenient zoning-wise, which I think is really positive because we need businesses in residential places to have third spaces for people to gather with their neighbors and come together. So in Maine, you know, we're able to live on the same property on which we're operating the brewery. And that's pretty rare, you know, and it allowed us to tackle this project and approach it as both our residents and our business, it would have been impossible to buy or even rent a house at the same time as securing a separate property to start this brewery up. So I really do think that Maine laws and also just Maine culture, you know, so many people work on cars in their backyard, you know, all the little antique shops in a garage, a lobster pound on the water that's sort of just a indoor outdoor, you know, shack that's open 5 months a year when the weather's right. And all those different things, I think, create a really ripe culture in Maine for a craft beer trail that is super diverse in terms of, you can go to Allagash, one of the biggest production-oriented breweries in the country based in Portland, or you can come up to Naiad Country Brewery, or for example, Turning Page Farm up in Monson, which is, you know, a very small, very rural farm where they have goats and they make some cheese, and that's what they're into. So yeah, there's just a really cool, ripe diversity of options for sure.
Okay, so that feeds, of course, into experiential tourism, which we've talked about on the show at other times. But what advice would you give to someone thinking of opening a similar craft brewery?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, if you are thinking about opening a craft brewery at this stage in the growth of the industry, where there's a lot that exist, there's a lot that are going out of business, I would say, make sure that you live and breathe this stuff. Make sure that the grind and the slog of cleaning floors, washing tanks, filling kegs is what lights you up and how you want to spend your time. Because otherwise, a very exciting, romantic sounding passion can become a pretty grueling slog. 80% of brewing is cleaning, you know, maintaining a sanitary environment is so, so important. And a lot of what I've, you know, learned from opening this brewery fairly recently is it's also a lot of paperwork and bookkeeping and licenses. And, you know, you're an alcohol business, so you're going to be regulated by your municipality, the state, the federal government, different agencies within the state. You know, we're here on well water, so that opens up a whole new, you know, avenue of certifications and various things. So just make sure that the day in, day out grind of brewing lights you up and excites you. Cause I feel so bad for, you know, I know a lot of homebrewers who in retirement have decided they'd love to open a brewery or something. And 4 years later you see them and they're haggard and they're like, wow, this is really hard. And
so, it's the old 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration story. Where can our WERU listeners find you and your products and experience Naiad Country Brewery?
Yeah, you'll be slightly hard-pressed to at the moment. We are closed currently in our first winter in order to do the building projects necessary to be open year-round in the future.
Sure.
So we will be reopened here at 15 Beechwood Lane in March. That is the goal. And from that point on, we hope to be open year-round. And coming up to March, we will be putting beer in bottles, and we'll be posting on Facebook and our other social medias bottle release opportunities for people to come here to the property and pick up some bottles and take them to go in advance of the tap room being opened back up. Naiad Country Brewery. And we are located here at 15 Beechwood Lane in Orland, Maine. We've got a small sign off of Highway 1, and it's down a sort of camp road. So yeah, that is where we are located. And if you want to throw us a follow, we are Naiad Country Brewery on Facebook and Instagram.
And if someone wishes to contact you, what's the best way?
The best email to reach the business if you're intrigued in doing a private event or anything like that is Naiad, N-A-I-A-D, countrybrewery@gmail.com.
Well, thank you so much, Spencer. This has been informative and fun, and I can't wait to get back to the brewery and lift a pint in your honor. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Adina. It was great to talk to you.
Welcome, Lance and Liz Meadows, to Creative Maine. I'm so glad that you could join us today. You have a very unusual business, and I thought it would be interesting to highlight your creative process and what you do. Your business is called So Rugged, S-E-W, So, and the concept behind it is very interesting. So what do you do? What are some of your signature products?
Well, thanks for having us on the show, Adina. We really appreciate it. Really, sort of the concept behind So Rugged is industrial or heavy-duty sewing shop. We focus on the materials that we start with more than the products that we make. So if you have a project that you really want to make with leather, or you really want to make with canvas, like sombrella fabric, that's our kind of shop. We really focus on leather, vinyl, canvas, and upholstery fabrics and products as our final sort of fabricated piece. We really focus on bringing somebody's vision to fruition. Many times that takes the form of cushions or boat upholstery, RVs, things like that. But that's the general idea.
So you both have divergent paths. I know that So Rugged has been open for about a year. So what did you do before that? What are your various paths leading to So Rugged?
So as far as So Rugged being open for a year, it's actually been a bit longer than that. We've been in our space here in Orland, in the village of Orland, for almost exactly a year now. Mm-hmm. But leading up to that, up to us moving into this space, we had the business out of the basement of our home, a very small space, and we quickly outgrew that. And bringing So Rugged to kind of fruition and creating this business came about in that, well, COVID hit. And I had a massage practice in Ellsworth for many years called The Natural Alternative. And I had to sort of pivot in a big way. And I'd always been involved in sewing in some way, often sewing things that I couldn't sew on my home machine. I broke so many needles, it's not even funny. And Lance and I had met we met back in 99 on the Maine Windjammer fleet. And Lance is a Maine Maritime graduate. He's a captain. He operated the schooner Timberwind out of Belfast for quite a few years. So our background kind of brought us to together and brought us to creating So Rugged.
So how do you take massage and sewing and being a schooner captain and put that together? How does that work?
I think a lot of it is business acumen. We had a lot of experience with as being entrepreneurs and in business. And then I honestly discovered that as a massage therapist, I spent most of my days problem solving issues that people had in their body, things that they held. And finding ways to help them release those issues or solve those problems. And I discovered that sewing, or at least So Rugged, is very similar in that we never know what's going to walk in the door. I never know what problem I'm going to have to solve or what solution I'm going to have to come up with. And it keeps it interesting and it makes our job very unique.
I would say, I wonder how your sewing, aside from the materials that you use, how does that differ from home decor or couture sewing, you know, and why is it difficult for a home sewist to do what you do?
Well, I would say the biggest thing is the machinery that we use and the tooling that we did, the learning curve of the learning curve of the chosen path that we took.
We have industrial machines, like Liz said before, of breaking so many needles. It really does get to that point where you can take on these projects, but it's just going to frustrate you at the end of the day. If you don't have the right tool to do the job, it just becomes really frustrating. The other big thing is that there's a chosen learning curve that Liz and I both sort of embarked on. A lot of canvas shops will focus on maybe exterior canvas for boats, making things like biminis and dodgers and sail covers. There's an entire industry of just making sails. There's also an entire industry of domestic upholstery that's really focused on sort of museum quality restoration of heirloom pieces. Mm-hmm. So really finding where you fit into that market has been a bit of a learning curve. And then obviously growing the skills needed to do that the best you can in the market. So our chosen path has really been in upholstery. We've both always been craftsmen of our own thing. You know, I like to take the schooner bit and talk about stewardship. We like to steward heirloom pieces. We like to help people in their restoration projects steward that piece, whether it's a Model A or it's a classic yacht out of Brooklyn Boatyard. We never know what's going to come through the door, but we get to be a part of that journey and really get people from this vision to a final product that we're all really proud of.
That's exciting. So you mentioned earlier that you are a custom fabrication shop. And by fabrication, you mean what?
Yeah, so it's really taking a raw material, designing a product, and then through the craftsmanship of that, of our trade, is how we get to that final product. Custom fabrication really is taking a raw material with a fresh concept design and creating a product from that. So you can come into our shop with a drawing on a napkin, and we are going to show you the proper materials for what you're trying to accomplish with that drawing. We really pride ourselves in getting you from start to finish. We joke that it's very hard to sort of standardize custom work, but our process is that where you come in and we work through a checklist, and we make sure that everything from fabric to custom foam to all of the different hardware that needs to be involved in your project, whether it's snaps on a cushion or we're creating an entire awning system for you. All of those jobs are very different, but through our checklist process, we can get you from start to finish.
That's amazing. So that's really the creative part of this. You have to creatively problem solve because, as you said, none of it is standardized. So how do you split the workload when you're looking at something that needs creative thinking? How do you put your heads together?
Oh, that's a great question. So I tend to be more artistically minded. Lance tends to be more engineer minded, and he keeps my feet on the ground. So that helps a lot too. so we tend to, we work really well off each other and with each other. And then we also find there are times where sometimes one of us is a better fit for that particular project. So we find that there are times where one of us will sort of take the lead in a project because maybe it's more artistically geared and we have to develop more of the idea of it. Or if it's more engineer geared where Lance is, you know, rigging up how something might function, and he is my math guy for sure. So he does a lot of the math as well. Our whole process is to help guide a client through that process. And so I definitely love to take on the aspect of guiding folks through the fabric selection and the foam selection. And then Lance is incredibly good at the math side of things and the geometry and sort of making things work and move.
So you're the form and he's the function.
Yeah, pretty much.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you have an example of a set of creative decisions that you made for a particular client that sticks out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. We're working on a project right now. Oftentimes we'll phase projects where we'll start with a concept, maybe let it run for a year, see it, how it functions in the environment. One that's coming to mind is a yacht out of Brooklyn that they wanted a very unique piece. We call it a saddle. It's just a piece that goes up on the rail, a little comfortable seating area that's not the normal settee cushions or the helm cushion. It's a very unique thing. When on a sailboat, when it's heeled over, you want to have support in the right places. And trying to come up with a design with foam and a material that's going to withstand the environment, the best sort of approach to this whole project was to phase it out and just sort of have a season. He went and did the Bermuda race. So we've got really good data. Oh. And now it's come back to our shop where we can see which parts really held up and which parts need to be addressed again. We do that through mock-ups and like I said, the phasing. So that's sort of how the process works on a bigger scale. Generally speaking, the lion's share of our clients are maybe a nook, breakfast nook cushion or something like that. And we've got some pretty good idea of what works best in those situations. So
sure.
It just depends on the project.
Well, you have a very interesting facility. You are located down on the Orland River in Orland Village, as you said. Tell us about the creative use you make of your facility. Maybe you can describe it for us and what you've done to make it interesting.
Well, if you can imagine, we moved from our basement space studio that was all of 20 feet by 15 feet. And this facility is
60 by 40.
Yeah, 60 feet by 40 feet. The amount of space that we have is just incredible. We're so fortunate and so grateful for the space that we have. Like you said, it's right on the river and we're in the beautiful little village of Orland. And we've had the opportunity to expand what we do in the space that we have. So when we used to have a really good time of sort of tripping over each other constantly, working around each other, we have been able to grow into this space and have different areas of the space for different functions of the business. So we have a really lovely consultation room where we have fabric samples and leather and vinyl and foam samples for customers to see and feel and take home with them. We have a foam room that where we can do custom cut foam, all different sizes, all different shapes, and all fun layups that we can do. Mm-hmm. And then we have the studio itself where we call that sort of the clean space, especially when we're talking about upholstery work. We tend to use the greater area of our business or of the building for teardown and then move it to the studio for building it back up where our clean space is.
Well, very interesting. Do you have other functions in your building? Have you been able to? I took a tour there and I remember seeing a space where you could lay out sailcloth, for example.
It is. That's really what changed last year when we moved into it is we've got it. In addition to everything that Liz was just talking about, there's a whole bay area that we've been able to bring boats or cars or trucks into. Like you said, we've been able to lay out larger awning projects there. Something I'm really excited to talk about is that we just signed our first tenant. We're going to have another business in the building with us, another craftsman, a woodworker. So we're really excited about where that might go and where he might take that. Really interesting gentleman. Mm-hmm. We still have some other spaces that we're kind of growing into upstairs. So, yeah, it's really just a dynamic time. We're in the first year of a 20-year exciting plan for Liz and I here. So I think there's a lot of growth and there's opportunities with classes or education. Who knows where it'll go, but we just kind of keep our eyes open for what feels good and what's a good fit. Really, at the end of the day, the building is an industrial arts space. So Rugged is the key tenant of this building, but over time we might expand like we are now with this woodworker. So we'll see where the future goes, but we're really excited about it.
That's exciting. Yes. So what advice would you give someone who is thinking of turning their creative passion into a similar business? Any key thoughts that you have from your experience?
I absolutely have some thoughts on this. My experience has been that having a passion for something doesn't necessarily make it a business. Oftentimes, the thing that you're passionate about and the thing that you're doing as a maker or as a craftsperson can be a small portion of what it means to be an entrepreneur. And so my biggest piece of advice for someone looking to turn their passion into a business would be seek out mentors, seek out other businesses that are business owners that you look up to and admire and talk to them. Ask them how they got there. And I'm going to guess that many of them find the same thing to be true. It's easier to do the thing that you love. It's harder to do the stuff that happens in the office. it's a lot harder to run the books and do that part of business. One thing that Lance and I have both utilized is the Small Business Development Center. And they are an incredible resource for all things business, especially when you're starting a small business. I would highly recommend that someone interested in turning their passion into a business, that they speak to them, reach out to them.
Excellent advice. So where can our WERU listeners find you and learn more about what you do and come see what you do?
Absolutely. Yeah, we are, like you said, right in the heart of Orland. 95 Castine Road in Orland is our shop. We do like to have appointments. Best thing is to make an appointment. Give us a call, maybe Google. Check our website at sorugged.com. From sorugged.com, you'll have all of our contact information. Fill out a little form and let us know what your project is all about. So we always like to start with a phone call.
And then you can work your creative magic after that. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's really quite a creative concept to take the engineering and the sewing and putting them together. And I think that's marvelous. So I thank you so much for coming on with me. This was a very interesting conversation.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much, Adina. We appreciate your time.
Creative Maine is alive with activities, presentations, workshops, concerts, and all manner of cultural endeavors. At this point in the show, we highlight a few of the many calendar items going on around the region. Today, we highlight some places to find some Maine winter fun. Which Stitch is a community group where participants bring a fiber or needlework project to work on and engage in conversation. A drop-in group, no registration is required. Which Stitch meets every Monday from 10 a.m. to noon at Art Waves, 1345A State Highway 102 in Bar Harbor. For information, visit www.artwavesmdi.org. Waterfall Arts, in collaboration with Dark Sky Maine and the Union of Maine Visual Artists, presents Dark Skies, a juried art exhibit opening January 17th and continuing to February 28th at Waterfall Arts, 256 High Street, Belfast, Maine. Over 30 artists participated in this exhibit. This dynamic show of paintings, photographs, and other artworks, which celebrates and encourages the appreciation of the night sky, will be held at Waterfall Arts, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. every day through February 28, 2025. For more information, visit www.theumva.org. On Saturday, February 8th, from 9 to 11 a.m., the Carver Memorial Library will be holding its annual stash sale for craft stash items. It will be held at the Mermaid Plaza on Route 1 in Searsport, and all proceeds go to support the library. For more information, visit www.carverlibrary.org. On Saturday, February 15th, the Maine Forest and Logging Museum will hold its annual Winter in the Woods event. Bring the family for demonstrations of Axe Women Loggers of Maine, Lord Byron the Blacksmith, Lombard Antique Steam Vehicles, and Maine author Tim Caverly, who will be telling some Allagash tales. The event will be held from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., snow or shine. The Maine Forest and Logging Museum is located at 262 Government Road in Bradley, Maine. For more information, visit maineforestandloggingmuseum.org or call 207-974-6278. For a more complete listing of events, visit our website, weru.org, and click the Community Calendar tab. If you would like to add an item to the community calendar, You may follow the prompts on the calendar page and submit your own event for the list. If you have an event that you feel is particularly pertinent to Creative Maine, send a note with the details to info@weru.org and list Creative Maine in the subject line. You are listening to Creative Maine on WERU 89.9 FM and on weru.org. Next, we speak with Keith Drago, director of the Carver Memorial Library in Searsport. Welcome, Keith Drago, director of the Carver Library in Searsport, to our show. Thanks for coming on Creative Maine. I find some of the programs that the Carver Library has to be very interesting to our listeners who are interested in art and craft. So I'm going to turn it over to you here. The Carver Library is small but mighty, and there are a number of unusual items for loan that are not books. Describe your craft, tool, and musical instrument lending programs, which are fairly unique as far as I know.
I would absolutely love to. And first, thank you so much for having me as well. I feel very privileged to be on the program today. So yes, the Carver Library is a small coastal library here in Maine, but we do have a very unique and robust library of things. We have a variety of crafting supplies as well as kits that we can lend to anyone who is a member. We also have a large selection of musical instruments that we can lend as well. We have ukuleles, but we also have, you know, banjos, guitars. We even have an accordion that we're able to lend. It's quite robust, and there's multiple of each of these as well. So it's quite robust, and it's really unique for a library to have that kind of selection of materials that are outside the realm of books.
So who would borrow a musical instrument? I mean, you can't, how long can you borrow an instrument for? Long enough to learn it? Or is this more for, oh, I have somebody coming in town who wants to play in a group with me, and, you know, they come from, you know, Nevada, and they can't bring their accordion with them, so they want to borrow one? Is it more like that?
Well, by default, all of the musical instruments will go out for 4 weeks, but we are incredibly flexible with that lending period. Like I said, we do have multiple of the same instruments. So even if there was a request, you know, two people are looking for a guitar that they can borrow, we can facilitate that. We have more than two to lend out. So that also allows us to be a little more flexible. But no, we're more than aware that someone may need longer than just 4 weeks to work with it. A lot of times when we're lending these out, it's not just for people who need to replace or pick up an instrument to play what they need to. Sometimes it's also for them to learn. They just want to see, is this something that's going to resonate with me? And instead of making that big initial, you know, purchase on, you know, a maybe, if they're going to stick with it, they're able to try the instrument first by getting it through us. And maybe they'll need a little bit of extra time with that. But much like we are with all of our lendings, if we can, we want to be as flexible as possible because we're here for the community. And, you know, things come up. Sometimes you need a little bit extra time. So, no, we're always able to give more than just the 4 weeks as well.
What fun. So, Keith, I understand that you're fairly new to Carver Library. Can you describe your career to this point? And was it these unique programs that drew you to this particular library?
Absolutely. There was a lot of things that drew me to this library. I think first and foremost, it was the community and the staff. When I went in for my first interview there, I was blown away by not only how much they did, but how happy they were all doing it, the staff that was there. I could tell, I got the impression, this is a special place. And it's interesting because since I've been there, everyone in the community has been so kind to me. And they all keep saying the same thing. It's a very special library, and I see it too. You feel it when you walk in. There's a warmth in there that you don't always get from other libraries. It's very unique in that way. So yeah, I've been working in libraries for just over 20 years now. I got my start at the University of New Hampshire's library system. I was lucky enough to get a work study job there, and it was great. I loved the work so much, and although I was going for a degree in journalism, which I received shortly thereafter, I knew I wanted to get into libraries. So I applied and I got into Simmons down in Boston. Mm-hmm. That's a great library school, and I managed to get my master's there as well. After that, I kind of worked at a variety of libraries. I worked at the Kennebunk Free Library. I spent some time out of the state. I worked in Texas for a big city there called Victoria at the Victoria Public Library. I then moved back to Maine, and I've worked at the Rockland Public Library. And most recently in my library career, I was the deputy director of the Rockport Public Library. I spent just over 6 years there. But yeah, no, I'm very excited to be in Carver now. And it's been a very fun experience so far.
Well, they, I think, are lucky to have you. You have quite a wealth of experience in big and small and university libraries. So you bring a lot to the job, I'm sure. So you were talking about the library being a very special place and very warm and very open to the community. And so it's kind of a community center, would you say?
Absolutely.
Do you have or do you envision creative classes at your library?
Oh, I would love to. Yes. Yeah. I'm still getting a feel. You know, I've been there for a month now, so I'm still getting a feel for what this community, what resonates in the community, what the community needs. And I see absolutely the joy of crafting. We run a Crafternoons group regularly. They meet on Zoom, which is a great way to bring them together. But outside of that, yes, I would love to have people come in to teach, to play instruments, to learn more about crafting. In the past, I know we've done events, kind of like jam sessions for all skill levels could attend, and I'd love to do more of those as well. But those sort of creative events are important because a library isn't just a place where you're borrowing books or even, you know, our library of things. It's also a place to meet and to talk and to share experiences. I very much believe it's not like we're part of the community, you know, we kind of are a way for the community to express themselves and to enhance what the community wants. That's how I've always seen libraries. And that's what we'll be doing, you know, at Carver.
That's great. Do you have some sort of a performance space or can people come in? You said jam sessions. Is there a performance area? Or
Not necessarily. We have to get very creative with the space we have. So a lot of times the reading room transforms into a performance space or for whatever is needed. If we're holding a program, we might have to move the table out of there and put some chairs in, things like that. So we get creative with it, but I'm always more than happy to do that. Like, it, you know, it can be tough. Oh, these books are a little hard to get to for the next couple hours, but I think it's, you know, I think the worth outweighs it because, you know, that's also what a library is about, bringing people together.
Absolutely. Well, that's fun. So I know that coming up in February is an annual stash sale, which I'm sure many people have on their calendars and look forward to. Can you describe it? Tell us what's going to happen and give us some details.
Absolutely. So yes, the stash sale. I'll start with the details. It will be on Saturday, February 8th. And it's just going to be from 9 to 11 in the morning, so 2 hours. We're holding it at the Mermaid Plaza in Searsport. That's 1 East Main Street in Searsport. And this is where it's been in the past as well. But basically, the gist of it is we'll have a variety of crafting supplies, you know, yarn and fabrics and whatnot, all set up through there. We have so much already, and we're continuing to take donations as well. And everything will be priced very competitively. This is a fundraiser for the library, which is fantastic, but it's also a way for us to help support the creative individuals in our community and beyond. And I know people come from very far for the sale as well. So prices will be much lower than you would find at you know, any store. Mm-hmm. So and it's just also a great way to meet other people who are interested in the same things you are. It's a very fun time. But yeah, it will be from 9 to 11 on February 8th at the Mermaid Plaza in Searsport.
So folks donate things from their probably their deepest closets. And, you know, if someone has been a crafter of some sort, maybe a cross stitcher or a knitter and no longer can do it, and they give their stash over to help support the library. Is that how it goes?
That's absolutely it. Yeah. Projects or materials that they had purchased and now they have too much and they just need to kind of, they want to do something with and they want to give back as well. Yeah. They can donate to the library. So as of right now, we are taking donations for more. We have more than enough to do the sale with what we have, but we could always use more as well. So anytime the library is open, if you have supplies and would like to donate, we would love to take them. They're just, the volunteers running it are just asking that last week we're going to hold off on donations so they can, you know, see what they have and set everything up. But prior to that, we would love to take donations. But yes, I know there's a lot of volunteers with storage spaces and attics that are just full of supplies right now that are ready for the sale.
Well, as a crafter, that just sounds like heaven on earth.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. And people come from all over. And
yes. Yeah. That's what I've been told, that people will travel from like hours away just to check out the sale because there's that much variety there. And it's
well,
a good deal.
That'll bring a lot of people into Searsport. I imagine the restaurants and coffee shops are gearing up for that event too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, it's a fundraiser for the library. It goes right back to supporting our programming and our materials that we're able to lend. You know, we can help facilitate our summer reading program by what we're able to raise through this fundraiser. So it's an important event for the library as well. And we immediately try to give it right back to our patrons.
That's wonderful. So what do you envision is next for the library? What do you see for the future now that you're a new person in the position? What's on your wish list?
Of course. Well, like I said, the staff there is so wonderful and they have so much positive energy. So right now it's about seeing what kind of programming we can do that's going to best fit in Searsport. Because I'm still new. I need to learn the community. You know, I'm familiar with working in libraries and coastal Maine towns, but all of them are different. So we're going to be looking at getting more programming going out, more programming for adult events as well. We're looking at creating a teen room. Like I said, we have a very small library and we unfortunately don't have a teen room at the moment, but we're trying to get creative with our collection and see if we can't carve out a space for young adults, for teens to be in, whether if they want to browse or study or just hang out. All of that would be great. We're also looking, if you're familiar with libraries, there's a robust interlibrary loan program through the state of Maine that's referred to as Minerva. That's what it's called. And it's a consortium of like 85 libraries that are all connected that can easily borrow books between each other. Mm-hmm. We're going to be looking at joining that. That would greatly enhance the material selection that our patrons would be able to receive. Right now, we do have an interlibrary loan that we can, of course, do. It's just it's slower and a little more difficult and hard to see what people can request. By joining that, that would greatly speed up their access to books and what we're able to lend to the community.
Lend Libby sort of books, you know, online books?
Oh, yeah. So we also have Cloud Library, which is an app that you can get on your phone, and it's pretty easy. You can just kind of type in your library card number and you're logged in, and then you can borrow a variety of ebooks and audiobooks. And it doesn't just have to be on your phone. It can also be on a tablet, whatever you prefer to read or listen on. And if you ever have questions about how to get any of that work, we're always happy to answer if you come in.
So you have this reputation now as a resource for creatives. So if you have things perhaps left over from the sale, like maybe a table loom or something like that, will that go right into your lending library?
Yeah, as long as we can facilitate it, absolutely. I know we do have a huge variety, and I don't want to limit us into like, oh, we're only going to lend these types of items. No, if we can identify that this is something that our patrons are going to want or this would provide a service to the community, then absolutely we will take it. So yeah, if something doesn't end up selling in the sale, but it is something unique that would help, we would love to add it to our collection.
That's tremendous. So please tell our Creative Maine listeners how to find you, your programs, get more information. How can people who aren't necessarily Searsport residents get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So our library, we're right in Searsport. If you want our address, it's 12 Union Street in Searsport. If you want to look at what events we have going on, we have a calendar up on our website. You can find our website. It's carverlibrary.org. But if it's easier, if you do a search in, you know, your search engine of choice for Carver Memorial Library, we will come right up. So you can just click that and click our calendar and see all the wonderful events that we have coming up. You can also always call us too. Our number is 548-2303.
And you have this reciprocal system. So can somebody, say, from Bucksport come over and do work with you?
So one of the things, as I was mentioning about us trying to get into the Minerva system, would be to better facilitate reciprocal borrowing, because all of the libraries in that system have free borrowing between themselves. As of right now, the only free library cards that we give out are to residents of Searsport. That said, if you live outside of Searsport, we can get you a non-resident card, and it's $10 a year, which is, I believe, incredibly competitive compared to what I've seen other libraries. Non-resident cards set to. So for $10 a year, you get access to our entire collection, the Library of Things, the musical instruments, crafting supplies, and we do still have an interlibrary loan program as well that we can receive from other libraries.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on Creative Maine.
Thank you for having me. This has been amazing. Thank you.
It's really great. I tell people to run, not walk, on February 8th to to the Mermaid Plaza in Searsport, because that sounds like a whale of a good time.
Absolutely.
And good luck in your career at the Carver Library. I think you have some great ideas, and it'll be wonderful to see what you do next.
So, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith, and best of luck to you.
Thank you. You as well.
Thank you so much to my entertaining guests, Spencer Janney, Lance and Liz Meadows, and Keith Drago. Our theme music is composed and performed by Ariel Chapman. If you have questions or comments for me or any of our guests, please send them to info@weru.org. Please write Creative Maine in the subject line. Please join Creative Maine at WERU 89.9 FM or on weru.org or on the WERU phone app for another eclectic episode of Creative Maine on Thursday, February 20th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, when we will learn about today's classical composers who are being showcased at the University of Maine. Thank you so much for listening. This is Adina Salmonson, wishing you a wonderful month of the arts and crafts that enrich your life and bring you joy.